All right, you're listening to the Technology Whisperers with
Sean Muller.
One of these days I'm going to go with, and you're going to go Sean Muller. And
but you mix it up. Sometimes you say your name first, and then you want me to say my name, and yeah, it's all good.
I'm just keeping you on your toes, Sean. Anyway, you're listening to the Technology Whisperers. My name is Alistair Ross, and I'm also with here, Sean Muller. All right, so look, Sean, it has been a really crazy couple of weeks. But before that, before I'm going to talk about what's made it a crazy couple of weeks, I was out in the street the other day in the windy capital here, Wellington. I know you're here most of the time too. So Sean and I are both Wellingtonites. But I was just walking down the street and a fella come up to me and he said, yeah, all right, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, cool, cool. I didn't really fully recognize what was going on. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I've seen you around, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes to me, Alistair, you're on that. He's clicking his fingers there, that podcast, aren't you? I'm like, huh? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, Technology Whispers? And he's like, yeah, man, that's it. And I was like, okay, all right, it's it. Sean, we've finally reached tipping point. We've got fame at last. I can walk down the street and I'm recognized.
You know, I think we almost need to, we're going to have to come up with some new rules, some whisperer rules, that if somebody approaches us at a convention or an event or something and mentions that they heard us on the Technology Whisperers, maybe we're going to have to buy them a beer or something.
We'll buy them a beer?
Yeah,
they should
be
buying us a beer, man. We're the celebs now, you know, they're going to pay for our time.
we'll come up with stuff. For those listening to us, we'll come up with some kind of rules and you know, maybe we'll give out a prize or something for the coolest. I'm just waiting for some day to have our image and the Technology Whisperer show up on somebody's t-shirt when they come walking up to me.
Well, maybe Sean, we need some merch. Maybe we should start, because everybody's doing that these days. I mean, you know, it's on YouTube, when you can go in and you can create like a little a little thing, and you can create a shop.
That's absolutely.
I like that. I'm thinking, you know, I mean, nobody's going to wear a t-shirt with our ugly mugs.
Okay, I've got
a face for radio. I'm sure I've been told that a few times.
You know, I think we might take a look at one of the image generation Gen AI things and see if we can generate maybe a cartoon image of you and me that would be much more attractive.
I can just see it now. sexybaldguyai.com.
That's right.
Yeah? And it takes these average sort of middle-aged white guys with bald heads and makes them into superstars. Look, if it could happen for, what's his face, the guy out of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, right?
Yep.
You know, why not? Sure.
Absolutely. So this week we're talking about AI, but not really talking about AI. We're talking about events in the AI space.
Sure. I mean, like, usually we dispel myths, right? That's not kind of... Right, okay, it is and it isn't what we're going to talk about. So first of all, we're going to talk about the news of the last 2 weeks in a certain thing to do with AI. I'm not going to give it away right now. I'll keep you in suspense. You probably know what it's all about. But then not at the end, but I think during this, we're probably going to ask sort of hypothetical questions of what the world will be like. And I've got a few opinions, and you might have some supporting opinions. You might have some conflicting opinions. You might have some additional ones, whatever.
I have a little crystal ball here that I will gaze into the crystal ball and make some
my head.
I didn't say that, but it was on the top of my tongue.
Funny enough.
So the particular company we're going to talk about is arguably the largest company in AI today and potentially arguably one of the largest companies in the world, not in market cap, but in influence and revenue generation possibility. And if you looked across the landscape, you might say that Facebook is a legacy company.
It's just weird to say that now, right?
I know. And that this company, and I'll name drop OpenAI, might be the next thing. Although in a lot of ways, it's not the next thing. It's the thing right now.
The thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are like kind of really bored and pissed off about hearing about the next big thing coming out of Silicon Valley, right? We had this cryptocurrency malarkey, we had the non-fungible tokens, we had Web3, we had
which have plummeted
about AI. Yeah.
The NFTs have become worthless. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had all those, which I never bought into, thankfully, but you know, we had a lot of these next big thing fads. But this one, I don't believe is the next big thing fad. It's here and it's only going to get more and more and more. So it's just kind of why I thought it's worthwhile talking about what's happened in the last few weeks. So the company we're talking about here is OpenAI. And if you don't know who OpenAI is, where have you been for the last, I don't know, especially the last year? Because in fact, right about this time last year, so November last year, OpenAI came out with ChatGPT version 3. And I think version 3 was the version that sort of suddenly made people look out and say, wow, this generative AI thing is a real thing.
So not that it matters, but let me correct that a little bit. It was the first version of ChatGPT, but it was using GPT-3 under the covers to do it. But you're right. It's exactly right. Would it make sense to, I think we need to discuss a little bit about the creation of OpenAI as a company, and we can name drop some names that went into it.
Absolutely.
And major funding.
Yes, I'll let you talk about it, but you're going to mention the semantics of how the board versus the company is formed.
Yes.
I'll let you do that then.
Yeah, so in OpenAI's initial creation, and by the way, Elon Musk was one of the major investors in the original company that was made. It was a not-for-profit company with the arguably... Yeah, very, very important. So the board of directors that was created was a not-for-profit. They were the supervising directors over the entire company as a not-for-profit with the, could be argued, a good goal of creating and controlling artificial general intelligence and for the betterment of humanity. What happened in the first couple of years was that they had major investments from entrepreneurs like Elon Musk and Microsoft, big investments. But one of the big challenges was that, as we all know, AI takes a lot of compute. So not-for-profit company doing all of this research on AI decided to create a non-profitable company. And it was really strange the way they did it. They created an arm of the company that would create products not intended to make a profit for the company, but to fund all of the infrastructure requirements, all of the compute requirements to be able to continue doing research on AI and to offer AI services. And they brought Sam Altman in to be CEO of that wing, the profitable side of OpenAI, still reporting to the board of directors that was the board of directors over the not-for-profit company. So that's the landscape of what we went into. Now, for anybody that's been watching the news over the last, I don't know, 9 months, Sam Altman has appeared before Congress. He was one of the people that signed the open letter that said, we need to either pause AI development or we need to put some guardrails or provide some kind of regulation over the development of AI, that AI was a severe risk to the future of humanity. So that's kind of the background for where we started into 2 weeks ago.
Big claims there. So you might think that, you know, somebody like Sam Altman saying that we need to press pause on the progress of AI for the betterment or the safety of humanity would be kind of counterintuitive to running a business that's creating AI.
For
but I
profit.
Think it's actually kind of clever. It's almost a little bit deceptive. And some of the people out there have actually said that Sam Altman is a bit of a deceptive kind of guy. I've read that recently in the press as well. I don't know whether that's true or not. But there you go. It's quite an interesting thing.
I heard some people saying things like it was guerrilla marketing.
Yes.
It was by saying that you were forcing people to have a discussion about it, which raised OpenAI in the discussion. I agree with you.
Yeah. So you're like, okay, well, who do we entrust with the hyper level of knowledge about what AI does? And how many companies are out there that does that? Well, there's kind of OpenAI and there's like maybe two or three other ones, right? So, you know, it's OpenAI. You're going to go, right, well, we trust these guys to look after the future of AI, right? Okay, so that said, fast forward to 17th of November. So that was like 11 days ago when we recorded this anyway. So Sam Altman got a Google Meets call. So they use Google Meets inside a company which is 49% owned by Microsoft. The for-profit part of it is 49% owned by Microsoft. It was an investment of $13 billion some months
ago. And we do need to mention that the CEO of Microsoft and the Microsoft team have stated on a separate podcast that their relationship with OpenAI was through Sam and his management team, not through the board of directors. So understand that Microsoft has a relationship with Sam Altman and the for-profit side of the business.
Yeah, that's very important, right? So yeah, 17th of November, Sam Altman gets a Google Meet call out of the blue, and basically the whole board is there, with the exception of Greg Brockman, who is the kind of like the co-founder.
Chief data scientist.
He's a main dude in OpenAI. So basically everybody's there that's really important apart from Greg. And it's a quick meeting. Basically, they just say, hey, Sam, by the way, you may be the poster boy, but you're fired.
Yeah.
That's like, that's a big call, because he's the guy who's seen by everybody as steering the AI, the generative AI for the new world, right? And then they hang up that call, the board does, and then the next call they make is to the co-founder or chief data guy, his name, Greg Brockman again, and he is immediately demoted on that call. But he says, well, this is a load of crap. I don't agree with this. And by the way, why did you fire Sam Altman? To which they say, oh, well, he wasn't particularly honest. I can't remember the exact.
They didn't have confidence that he was being as open as they needed him to be with the board. The makeup of the board is important, because there are several independent board members on there from outside of the company, in particular ones that were specifically brought in to do the nonprofit side of the governance, that have a view of how AI should be used, how it should be released into the public, the guardrails and security and other controls that should be placed on it. And they are at odds with the way Sam and the rest of the OpenAI on the profit side view how AI should go out.
That's very true. And I'll come back to that in a moment. But basically, the end of that, Greg Brockman resigns there and then on that call and says, hey, I'm leaving in disgust. This is crap. So it didn't take very long. I think it was like a day or less that 740 approximately staff out of the 770 that work for OpenAI basically came up. They probably asked GPT to make it, but they came up with a letter saying, what the hell, basically. Yep. And they said they were going to leave OpenAI and form another company, probably under Microsoft, if they can't get the board to resign. So they're basically saying, we don't agree with the decision you've made to fire Sam Altman. Yep. And Microsoft also came up and said, Microsoft were blindsided on that, to be fair to Microsoft.
Yes. Yeah.
They didn't know about this. So Microsoft made a tweet and a press release and said, look, we're behind OpenAI. We want to make sure everything's good. We fully, it was a kind of nonsense thing, but it was just basically saying, it was kind of whitewashing it all.
Yeah.
But they did say that you had jobs for everybody at Microsoft for the people who were going to leave OpenAI.
Yeah, within 2 days, they had hired Sam and Greg and created a new division for advanced AI development. And in a tweet, they basically said, anybody that leaves OpenAI, there's an open role for them at Microsoft that they can just come straight across. Yep.
Yeah. And I think one of the important factors in that, though, is that although they had created these positions for Greg and Sam and had given them a contract to sign, I don't think at that point they had actually signed the contract. So they were saying, they were agreeing to go to Microsoft and take the role.
It's interesting because it is a little bit blurry between the tweets that were going out on X and some of the press releases. It goes back and forth, and I found conflicting news reports about whether or not they had already accepted the jobs or not.
Yeah, a bit unclear.
But you're right. It's a little unclear whether or not they had already accepted the roles.
Yeah. So it looks like whatever happened spilled out into the public domain. And I mean, I guess I'll just wrap this up, because I mean, there's a little bit more detail to it, but I'll wrap it up by saying ultimately what happened is on the weekends or over the weekends, Sam Altman was given the opportunity to go back to OpenAI. He yep. took the job at OpenAI on the condition that a new board was appointed, and yep. that has now happened.
Yep.
So, look, it's that in itself is a big storm, and maybe some will say it's a big storm in a teacup and it won't amount to anything. But I think the bigger point to make is that here is an organization that we are really not necessarily entrusting. Entrusting is not the right word, but some of us are kind of by proxy, because they're the leading company in AI, generative AI. They are the company that's going towards the generative AI. So we entrust them by proxy to be responsible with the future of humanity. And yep. like we can, it sounds corny. It actually sounds like when I say it, the future of humanity. But Sean, maybe you want to explain why I say that. Like,
yeah.
Why is it so important to get this right?
Yeah. So let's back up just a little bit, because there was a precursor event that it looks like precipitated the board reaching out and, let's be blunt, firing Sam Altman. I mean, you can't sugarcoat that. They literally got on a call and fired him. Evidently, some developers inside OpenAI to do with a current project that's going on called QStar had mm-hmm. sent an open letter to the board that they were concerned that the project was showing such success that they thought they were ready to make the next step that was going to potentially put humanity at risk. So to give you an idea, that is coming directly from Reuters, which, you know, Reuters was contacted. They reached out to OpenAI. OpenAI declined to comment, but there was an internal memo around a breakthrough in specifically to do with artificial general intelligence. Now,
yeah, this got out to Reuters, right? So this was it was a leak from somebody inside OpenAI.
Yes. So this letter gets sent to the board of directors, and in it, they're basically saying, we think this is the next step to artificial general intelligence. And if this is correct and it works, we may be looking at artificial general intelligence within, you know, months.
Yeah. So backing up just very quickly, for a second, Sam Altman, a few months ago, I think it was like May or June, he said, look, our goal is to have AGI in 18
That's right.
months. And that was
That's
his
true.
Thought process at the time. Now, in that time, we've had a major number of advancements. We've had GPT-4 Turbo. We've had the trademark registrations of GPT-5, GPT-6, yep. and GPT-7. And yep. you can see the iterative quality of responses yep. from the GPT engine. Now, the GPT is an LLM. And LLM stands for Large Language Model, which is basically... Yes. like it says on the tin, it's using language to lots of different parts of language, you know, on the internet and scraped from everywhere to figure out what to say next kind of thing.
Yep.
So it's
yep.
good at language, but yep. what it's not so good at is reasoning and mathematics. So if you ask
yes.
it to, you know, things like what's the weather going to be like tomorrow, or what's the answer to some really logical kind of expression, mathematical expression, not so good there. So
that's right.
This QStar thing is really about the next phase, and it's called AGI, Artificial General Intelligence. So what is AGI? What's Artificial General Intelligence?
Yeah, so let's touch on that mathematics for a second. So there are machine learning models, there are artificial intelligence engines for the sake that can pass lower level mathematics exams, can even pass higher level mathematics exams, but they're purpose built machine learning models designed to pass those tests. So they've been trained on data associated with machine learning or with mathematics that makes them good at doing mathematics. Artificial general intelligence is a machine learning or a set of machine learning models that work together that can extrapolate information that they've not been trained on. So it's exactly the point you made, Alistair. They know the language and they know the context of all the language because they have that in their memory. But if they can turn that around and use that to figure out a mathematical problem, that's so not a purpose built for mathematical problems, purpose built to be able to answer questions and interact with language and extrapolate it to. So when we start looking at artificial general intelligence, we look at our artificial intelligence driven by models that can do multiple tasks, can be trained on one task that they can then extrapolate answers to other. And evidently, that's what QStar did without specifically training it on mathematics. They built a structure within QStar that they trained their large language model, and then they had it take primary school level mathematics courses, and it passed. So it interacted with the math exams and was able to figure the stuff out based on what it knew from its large language models. And that may be a very minor, very small, very minimal version of artificial general intelligence, but if it works that way, it's hugely powerful. It means that you can, if you train on a large enough corpus of information, that the tool can figure out how to solve other things.
Mm-hmm. That's it as well. The point, there will be a break-even point, I guess, where AI can start teaching itself.
Yes.
About how to improve, and then we're really off to the races there, right?
Yeah, artificial super intelligence is the next, when the artificial intelligence can do stuff better, faster than, and in a way that we as humans can't even understand what it's doing. And I believe that's the crux of the risk to humanity at that point.
Yeah. So if we get to a reasonably mature point of artificial general intelligence, that's basically, we've started this potentially, if this is what we're saying with this QStar thing, if that's just matured out by another few months, then we have, elementary grade, college grade, university grade, even capability in general intelligence. So we're a generally intelligent human being, but actually it's a machine. Now, the problem with that is, or not the problem, but the idea behind that is that basically we're saying that machine can do tasks that our brains can do probably only better as well, or better. And that's not even the super intelligence. Yeah. That's not completely thinking for itself. That's just at the level it's been trained to do. So the interesting point from that, I guess, and the big thing that people are saying, oh, goodness, we might need to pause on there, is if we let that cat out of the bag, as soon as that's done, then that's going to start being able to do people's jobs. Now, some people say that's a good thing, and some people say, oh, we need to be cautious, and then some people say it's a bad thing. But wherever you stand on that, basically, that's what's going to happen with this technology. We're going to be able to, in the jobs that we think for our work, right? We're sitting at a keyboard all day and we're doing things and we're thinking.
Yeah.
That kind of task will be able to be done by AGI. Is that right?
Yeah. Right. And here's the thing. We have a lot of technology, and generative AI is very capable to be able to assist and support people that are doing tasks to make them more productive, to make them more creative, to give them more outlets. But we've been missing a piece of technology. The jump to artificial general intelligence requires something new that we've never seen in the technology before. If this is that thing, if the structures within, and I've read several articles that try and tease out what this might be based on information we know coming out of OpenAI. But if this is that little tick that pushes us over, then we see a geometric growth in the capability of AI. So once the technology can learn on its own, and it can learn 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year without stopping, we're going to see a hockey stick effect to the ability of AI to be able to do things.
Yeah. And then we add quantum computing, which we talked about the other week.
That's
onto
right.
That. And then, that's game over humanity. No, I mean, I'm being facetious, but look, it's going to change everything rapidly when you get to that point. So look, I just want to come back to a question I was kind of almost about to ask before we talked about QStar. And that's really about the custodians, right? So what I'm talking about is the fact that we had a board there, and whether they were doing something for good intention or their intentions weren't quite right or whatever, that information hasn't come to light. Doesn't matter. The end of the day, the way that they handled it by just coming out there and firing this basically celebrity poster boy off the technology, it was handled incredibly poorly.
Yes,
I think so. Nobody can really dispute that. That is what it is. It was out there in public. It was a spat. It was messy. People everywhere in the organization, including Altman and the board themselves were tweeting things publicly. It was a PR disaster. So look, the problem that we have there is that when you do things like that, it's not very mature. And if you're talking about the technology that's going to really advance humanity, then we're making mistakes like that. It doesn't fill you with much confidence, right? So, and then I understand that Ilya Sutskever, who is part of the board and at least sometime mates with Altman, he did a 180 later. He made a huge mistake that he didn't want to get involved in the firing of Sam Altman.
So I believe he was the, besides Greg, he was the only OpenAI employee that actually sits on the board. And I think it's interesting, if we look at the makeup of the board, a lot of the people that were brought in were either academics or they were people that work in the space around, my mind just totally went blank.
There was Adam D'Angelo, Helen Toner, Tasha McCauley, and of course, Ilya Sutskever. I think there's other people on the board, but those are the kind of big names. Helen Toner, of course, Australian. I think she was, and a lot of things, a doctor of something, but they're all quite young people. And
well,
is
they,
Adam D'Angelo that, is he the guy that runs Quora?
Yeah, I believe so. And most of them have something in common, and that's that they have a view on, you know, altruism and how we should do things for society and how we should protect society. And based on the statements that the board has made, they believe that OpenAI should be not releasing things into the public until they have good understanding internally that, you know, there's not a risk there. There aren't bad things that can happen to it. And in all fairness, you know, Sam Altman, who, you know, started his first company at 19, he's taken more of a software developer, agile developer type approach and saying, no, let's get it out there. Let's get lots of the public people playing with it and breaking it. Mm-hmm. And through that process, we'll fix it better and we'll fix it faster. And so that is completely, those two things are completely, you know, opposite to each other. There's no way they can coexist.
I think it's also worthwhile noting that, you know, Sam Altman is, you know, a standard de facto capitalist, whereas quite a lot of the board are not necessarily a communist or anything like that, not at all, but they're also slightly different in the way that they view the world. So they think that there, once there is a better model than capitalism, they want that overthrown, which is, you know, it's like a, I can't remember what the name of that sort of,
yeah, I was trying to think
way
about
of thinking
well.
Of things.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a new way of thinking about things in terms of, you know, where our world is going, I guess. So it's interesting to see their political views and their socioeconomic views and where they align with the rest of the world's thinking. You know, it's definitely not in any particular person's camp. So like any, like it's not socialist, it's not capitalist, it's not communist.
It's
somewhere like, different.
What do they call it? And I was just looking at it. It's like ethical altruism or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can look that up yourselves. But I mean, I think the main reason that I brought this up, though, is because if these people are or were the custodians of the future of humanity or a future major generational change, then it doesn't instill me with very good confidence.
No.
And you know, really, this just goes to show that whomever we have looking after these organizations, be it a government entity, be it a for-profit or a non-profit, we still need to like really fact-check all of these people involved and see whether they have the general understanding of the majority of people and who is the majority and what do their values contain. And it's a really big philosophical question to have, right?
It's really interesting because, you know, the majority of the board was this, you know, ethical altruism approach. And I know someone's going to come back and tell me that I've got the acronym wrong, but yet they didn't seem to take a very altruistic approach for how they approached Sam Altman. And by the way, Sam Altman and the rest of OpenAI didn't seem to respond in an ethical, and it's interesting because I do some consulting in AI, as you know, and one of the things I talk about is we can talk about ethical AI, but if the company isn't ethical, it doesn't matter if you build an ethical AI. They're going to do things, if they're a for-profit company, they're going to do things for profit. And unless they have guardrails or regulations or things in place, they're going to do things for profit, you know, whether they're ethical or not. And an ethical AI is not going to fix that.
That's right. It's absolutely correct. And it's a worrying thing. You really have to be careful about who we entrust to do this. So, you know, governments are not going to be quick enough to keep up with the emergence of technology. So who is ultimately responsible for the guardrails that go in? Because things are moving so quickly that we are not able to govern this in an appropriate fashion.
That's right. Really? Even the governments that do have regulation in place. So the European Union has something that's about to land. The US has something that's about to land. Even the UK is looking at something. The countries are trying to keep up, but this is not something that a government's going to be able to vote its way into. And we just need to keep our eyes open and watch what's happening. There's not going to be a switch day where suddenly AI just takes over everything. We're going to cede things to them, right? So similar to Facebook, we seeded the fact that we're out in the public all of the time. The pictures of our children are out in, you know, on the social media platform all the time. That we scan through the Facebook and we look at different advertisements, and we're giving that data away. So we've slowly seeded our privacy away in that space. That's the way it's going to happen with AI as well.
Yeah. So then we potentially get to the point where we have no point of turning back, so that the judgment day sort of thing becomes a reality. And I mean, it's bizarre to be seeing these sorts of things, but there is some sort of reality base on this, right?
Well, it is, and we may actually be already past the point of no return. And the reason I say that is that, so the large language models are dependent on very large quantities of language data. Guess where that's coming from? That large language data sets are coming from social media. They're coming from Twitter. They're coming from Facebook. They're coming from Instagram. They're coming from Pinterest. We're giving that data. So now they've created these massive data sets that they're using to train these models. And by the way, they're hiring people in third world countries to train the data, to label all of the data so that they can use it. And there was a huge expose a couple months ago about the fact that OpenAI and Microsoft and several of the companies use these data labeling farms in third world countries to label massive amount of data that they need to train the models to make them successful. But once we start, and this is where QStar becomes really interesting, because of these large language models and the training data associated with them, QStar appears to be able to use synthetic data, or it may be able to use synthetic data to do what it's doing. If that becomes the case, now we don't need those people. And it just accelerates.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because I forgot about that. That's a very important point about what was discussed about QStar. Yes, yeah. QStar. And that, like, that's a massive change to everything else that we've done. Yes. Everything up until now has been completely real, normal information. So whether it came from, like you say, Instagram or Wikipedia or whatever, it's all based on real information. And the taxonomies of that is kind of manual. So the fully synthetic data is, you know, is iterative, and it can be introduced by the system for the system anytime it likes.
And oftentimes it can reinforce biased data, right? So if you have a small data set, it gives you a much larger data set without overfitting, and we don't need to go into machine learning models and what that means, but it allows you to do that. The problem is that oftentimes what happens is it reinforces those biases. So anybody that's played around with any of the generative AI tools knows that if you say, show me a picture of a race car driver in Europe, you get an image that it looks like an Italian race car driver in Europe, which is biased, right? I mean, there are lots of other nationalities that live in Europe and that drive race cars. And so that reinforcing a bias becomes really bad within the machine learning models, especially if we're trying to be inclusive. And so, that synthetic data oftentimes can reinforce that. And there are ways to control that, but you have to decide to do those things and do them for ethical reasons.
Yeah. And then I guess that kind of extrapolates out to the point of, like, once you start with that fully synthetic training data, it's very difficult to go back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's a much slower process. You can release the AI into the public and allow it to interact with the public, and so it begins learning by the way it interacts. And by the way, that's one of the things that we've seen within ChatGPT is that as you put guardrails on ChatGPT and feed data into it from your local context, you can make it better and better and better about how it knows about you and what it does with you. But there's a risk associated with that. And I think that, like many other things, social media being a perfectly good example, the vast majority of public is uptaking this technology without understanding the ramifications of what it is they're doing. They don't even understand how it works. They don't understand what the risks associated with it are. They just see it and use it.
Yeah, you say a good thing there, a good point, which is they don't understand how it works. Now, that's not necessarily people's fault, though, because OpenAI, specifically, I'm looking at OpenAI, they have made a black box. So they call their company Open, but the reality is the LLM, the large language model, all of the data, all of it is in a black box. Nobody knows how it was trained and
completely
what it was
trained with. So that's a completely big problem. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I want to, let me clarify a little bit, because I've spent years and years and years learning how machine learning models work and how we train them. And I don't expect the general public to do that, but they do need to have a base level understanding of what it is that they're interacting with. And you know, you and I know what a large language model is, but we say a large language model to a standard business executive. So I'm not talking about someone that, a teenager that's working at a fast food joint. I'm talking about a business executive who doesn't know anything about technology. If you say a large language model to them, they don't even know what it is you're talking about, yet they use Google to search for things. They use ChatGPT to write emails to their employees. They're using these tools without even understanding a base level of, okay, this is what it's doing in English. Now, here's the interesting thing. They could actually ask ChatGPT and it will explain to them in a way that they can understand and grasp enough for that they'd understand it, but they've got to know to ask the question. And we're not going to talk about prompt engineering here, but one of the things is that when you interact with ChatGPT, you can give it things like, do this from the context of a teenage girl, or do this from the context of a 50-year-old white man. The most interesting thing is, and the next time you use it, Alistair, and the next time anybody that's listening to this uses ChatGPT, before you type in what it is that you want it, type in take a breath, and then comma, and what it is that you want to ask, and see if you get a slightly different response, because actually that causes the model to actually slow down before it responds to you.
Wow.
And it's a prompt. Yeah, it's a prompt engineering. So there are all these little tricks that you can do within prompt engineering to make it better, to make it smoother, to make it work better. But the vast majority of people don't know how to do that. The same as Facebook. Facebook has all kinds of capabilities for security controls and, you know, what you share and what you don't share. And the vast majority of people that use Facebook don't know anything about them. And yet they're giving all of their data and all of their interaction data to Facebook for free.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, so I was going to sort of conclude all of this with my opinions on why Altman was let go in the first place, because we don't know the answer. We simply don't know. So I'm hypothesizing here, and feel free to weigh in with your opinions. But I sort of see four potential reasons, and it would be really good for eventually an investigation to come out, or somebody just to say the truth and say what it is, because it does kind of matter. You might be saying, Alistair, well, you know, why does that matter? It's just, you know, it's just somebody having a disagreement. It matters because of the technology involved and what implications this technology could have for humanity. And that's what I've said a few times in this podcast today. And every single time I say this matters about humanity, kind of irks me a little bit, because I'm like sounding like it's like, I'm being cheesy or whatever, but the reality is it is about our future. That, you know, when we changed into the Industrial Revolution, it changed everything for humanity. And we changed into the Information Age with computers, it changed again. And now we're going into the Knowledge Age with AI. But every time that's changed so far in these ages, we've had major changes. But this
and somebody's been left behind each time.
Yes. This one is going to be much bigger, in my opinion, of course. What about you? Would you say the same? It's going to be much bigger than any one of these ages.
Yeah, I think it's going to fundamental. We no single time have we had a single piece of technology that could touch every single industry the way that AI can.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So my four reasons that I'm going with is, one, the board had a disagreement over morality.
Yeah.
So basically, you've got the board who say, look, we're here for ethics, we're here for the right reasons. We have, like we kind of discussed already, we believe in this kind of philosophy about the world, and capitalism is not kind of our jam. It's over here somewhere else. So our morals don't line up with your morals, and therefore goodbye, right? The other one was the reason that they gave, which was that he had been liberal with the truth. So that's my second reason. I find that hard to believe, though. What sort of truth would you have to be? How big an issue? You know, it might be more than just a little bit of being liberal with the truth.
Yeah, I think those two, and I do want to hear your other two, but those two I think actually feed together. And I do think they had a fundamental difference of opinion about the morals of releasing AI. But I think what they're alluding to, and again, this is crystal ball, I have no inside knowledge whatsoever and could be completely wrong. But I believe Sam was telling them, okay, I'm going to follow what you say and I'm not going to release stuff into public. And what he was doing was, is they were releasing stuff into public. And yeah. GPT-4 Turbo is a perfect example of that. Is I don't know that, you know, the board felt like they were consulted and listened to enough before that was released.
Well, that's right. So we had Dev Day, you know, OpenAI's Dev Day. And so that was GPT-4 Turbo, wasn't it? And also custom GPTs, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was 2 days after that, he was fired. So one day he's up on stage going, hey, look at all our wonderful products.
Yep.
And then the next day, well, pretty much the next day, he's gone. Now, one of the board members, I haven't remembered the name. I should have had that up, but I don't. But one of the board members is the CEO or representative of Quora. And interestingly, they've just sort of pivoted their business into providing basically custom GPTs, right?
Yeah.
So Sam Altman perhaps stole that technology or the idea of it and then reinvented it under OpenAI, or at the very least, it's in competition with one of the board members. So that is a disagreement. That's maybe the morality aspect. That's part of that I was kind of talking to. So yeah, so that's one of the two things.
Yep.
The other one was Sam's interests. So Sam Altman has started to dilute his interests. He's been an entrepreneur all his life, since 19, I think you said.
Yep.
So he started to seek overseas investment from SoftBank and other companies in the UAE. There's a company for eyeball recognition for crypto authentication solutions. So that's just, you know, making the owners of crypto more accountable and authenticate them realistically.
Yep.
But the other one, which is closer to home about AI, is a competitor, to build a competitor to NVIDIA. So if you don't know,
chip manufacturer,
they're a chip manufacturer, and a lot of the compute that we use today for AI, large language model AI, is using GPUs rather than standard CPUs because they're very good at that sort of task. Now, NVIDIA have pretty much got the market wrapped up, and that's why share value in NVIDIA is through the roof, and they've done quite a good market pivot recently in going towards AI. So, you know, kudos to NVIDIA for doing that. And they've stolen the show. So Sam Altman has said, look, we rely far too much on this one company to make GPUs, which is a fair comment. But he's now decided that, you know, I could make some serious coin here and make a new GPU company. So that is a rooted interest. So if you're open AI, you're running this crypto eyeball recognition company, and you're then also dealing with a GPU tech company, there's a lot of spread divested interest there. And it's quite difficult for a board to get their heads around saying, which one are you actually invested in?
Well, and I think the chip, he made the announcement about the chip manufacturer that OpenAI wanted to do at Dev Days. And that he wanted to go get, I'm going to get the number wrong, but I think it was $100 billion was what he was looking to get investment to build out this chip company. He didn't specifically say as a competitor to NVIDIA, but specifically to develop AI chips designed to optimize for OpenAI. So, Alistair, I think you're dead on with those four things. I think they all played into it. There's one additional one that I want to
highlight. Fourth thing for me was the AGI, the Q star, right?
But yeah.
Go, what's your number five?
Well, so my number five is Microsoft.
Yeah.
So Microsoft is investing more and more. They're embedding OpenAI into more and more of their tools. And Microsoft has a relationship with Sam and with, as I said earlier, the managing directors within OpenAI. And I believe that the board might have made the board uncomfortable. Microsoft has always been a for-profit company. They're building a relationship with the for-profit side of OpenAI, and the not-for-profit or non-profit board is looking at that, not liking that relationship, and that may have also fed into it.
Microsoft are the epitome of capitalism, right? So
that's right.
It's very, very opposing to the not just the not-for-profit, it's also a difference of opinion on the way that the world should be with a lot of the board members, like we talked about earlier. So yeah, totally go with that. And of course, you know, now we have five things there that could be the reason. It could be a mixture of all five or some of the five. But these are, I believe, the strong contenders as to what it could be. And I would love to hear from you, you know, either via email or on LinkedIn or YouTube or wherever. Just get in touch with us and let us know if you have a different opinion, whether you have a different reason. I think this is a great talking point. And it certainly is something that's going to really change everybody's jobs over the next few years. So, yeah.
And if you have, you know, if you have any opinions or there's something that you would like us to talk about or demystify, please reach out to us. This is unusual for us. This was such a big deal and it was all over the news. And I know I was glued to Twitter, formerly Twitter X now, watching this happen as it was happening. And I know you were too, Alistair, because we are deep in technology and we have been for, you know, 30 years, both of us. And so we can see when something is happening that's going to be changing the world. And this is something that's important.
It is. And I think a lot of people are just starting to wake up now to the reality of how important this is. Usually, you know, I would sort of say, well, use a pinch of salt, and you know, but this time I'm really going to put my money where my mouth is. As I've said before, you know, 18 months ago or 24 months ago now, probably, you know, it really wasn't that big a thing for me anyway, but now I certainly believe that this is the future.
Well,
where everything's going.
And I'll use my crystal ball here, and I'm going to say it with one caveat. If QStar does what they're purporting that it does, we're going to be looking at documented AGI within the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, totally agree. It's not far off. And I mean, like, as I said at the beginning, like Altman's going to, he said the goal was 18 months.
Yeah.
I actually looked at a YouTube video that had they went on to the Wayback Machine, archive.org, and they looked at the wording on the website for OpenAI. And the wording said something around, you know, it was like job posts and what their vision statement is and what their, the mission statement and what their ethics and all the rest. And if you look, that's completely changed now.
That's right.
Everything is about AGI. Everything is about artificial general intelligence.
Yeah. And I believe, and I'm never going to be able to find the tweet again, but someone tweeted from within OpenAI that they were using their generative AI inside to rewrite that vision and mission statement. So to give you an understanding, you know, the general public about these companies are eating their own dog food. The reason they're accelerating as fast as they're accelerating is because they're using AI to accelerate what it is.
Yeah, they know how powerful it is. So look, I think we'll wrap up on that point. I just wanted to say, if you like what we are doing, please give us some feedback. I'd love to get some of that. And also, we're open to sponsorship. We've had a few chats around that. And if there is somebody out there who's listening out and would like to sponsor their products or their services or the company, do let us know, get in touch. And yeah, also, Sean, where can people reach you? How do they reach you?
So I'm on the Twitters and the Instagrams and Facebooks and LinkedIn. You can find me at Sean G. Muller, all one word. And I'm across pretty much every social media platform. And how about you, Alistair?
You can find me over at my business. I run a company called Revolution InfoSec. So you can get that at www.revolutioninfosec.com. I am on Twitter as well. And you can find my YouTube channel, Revolution InfoSec NZ. And yeah, of course, Alistair Ross, Alistair J. Ross, I think it is, at on LinkedIn. So you just search for me there as well. I'm happy
I'll make sure I'll make sure the podcast notes has links to all of those as well. So don't hesitate to reach out to us.
Yeah, I really do enjoy the general feedback that we get on these podcasts and hearing what the people think of them and, you know, maybe even just giving us a little bit of, you know, hard time and saying, no, I don't agree with you. Here's my opinion. Love it.
Yeah,
love
that. I'm good with that. I'm good with that as well. And I believe we just hit a milestone. I want to say it was the week before last we rolled over 1,000 downloads. So this being, this is episode 9 in season two, and we've just rolled over 1,000 downloads. So yeah, and I love it. I love it when people say to me, "Yeah, I've told all my friends about you," or that's just great. Give us those feedback. We'd love to hear it. Thank you guys very much.
Yeah, thank you. Well, anyway, that's a wrap for today. Thank you very much for listening to the Technology Whisperers. We will be back, Sean and I, in 2 weeks' time. But until then, take care and thanks for listening.